The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On the last program, we had looked at two comments by noteworthy individuals, one Charles Darwin and the other George Wald. We had observed that Darwin discussed at one point in Origin of Species the idea that carbon dioxide molecules could compete with one another, struggle with one another, to be incorporated into the plant tissue to undergo the photosynthetic process. And George Wall was talking about how natural selection existed down not just on the atomic level, but on the level of protons and electrons. And I will not repeat my observations to you about that. I think any thoughtful person would find that inane at best. And this would lead us then to another step a little bit beyond that of the proton, electron, or even the atom level. If you're looking at evolution as the answer to how things get here, I made a comment a couple of programs ago, I think, about the idea that you pick up books like Oprin's book on the origin of life or Keosian's book by the same title, and you will read there a discussion of how elements, after hydrogen has evolved into all the rest of the elements, then you have hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, bumbling around, manufacturing simple molecules like water, methane, ammonia, etc., and then these simply forming more and more complicated molecules. And my comment at the time had to do with the fact that in order for this kind of thing to happen, it requires an energy source. And the energy sources that you will find always in those kinds of discussions are sunlight, ultraviolet light, lightning, electrical impulses, etc. And none of those things that I have just mentioned are helpful in synthesizing molecules. They have exactly the opposite effect on them, as I'm sure some of you know at least about some of them. I wanted us to look at a comment in this light. There was a man by the name of John Horgan, H-O-R-G-A-N, who in February of 1991 published an article in the Scientific American. The article was entitled, In the Beginning. Quote, "None of these approaches has gained enough support to qualify as a new paradigm. He has been discussing the mechanical evolutionary theories, which of those could possibly be used for supporting the idea of the evolution of life." Continuing the quote, "On the other hand, none has been ruled out. That bothers Miller." This is the Miller of Uri Miller fame, and we will talk about his work in just a moment. "That bothers Miller, who is known as both a rigorous experimentalist and a bit of a curmudgeon. Some theories," he asserts, "do not merit serious attention. He calls the organic matter from space concept a loser. The vent hypothesis, garbage. The pyrite theory, paper chemistry. Such work," he grumbles, "perpetuates the reputation of the origin of life field as being on the fringe of science and not worthy of serious pursuit." End quote. He is exactly right about that, as we have argued repeatedly. Science demands the possibility of human perception. And when you are talking about historical events of this nature, those events that had to occur before man was ever on the scene, then you simply don't have any possibility of scientific information about it. And it would help lots of folks if Miller would recognize that. Later on in the article, he made this comment, quote, "DNA cannot do its work, including forming more DNA, without the help of catalytic proteins or enzymes. In short, proteins cannot form DNA, but neither can DNA form without proteins." Now, we're going to get to this in a little bit when we talk about the supposed evolution from inorganic molecules to organic molecules. It's a little bit ahead of time, but there's another point I want us to note in his comments. As researchers continue to examine the RNA world concept closely, more problems emerge. How did RNA arise initially? This is ribonucleic acid for those of you that have not had biology recently. RNA and its components are difficult to synthesize in a laboratory under the best of conditions, an interesting and correct statement, much less under plausible prebiotic ones. Now, the thing we're getting around to here is this so-called plausible prebiotic. What was the nature of the environment on the Earth prior to the presence of living things, back at the stage when the atoms were presumably evolving and simple atoms were combining with molecules? And as I presume you're aware, the evolutionists argue that this was simply a reducing atmosphere, reducing meaning in this instance, that there was no free oxygen in the atmosphere, that the atmosphere was made up of methane, ammonia, etc. Both of these compounds and the others that are usually listed, carbon dioxide, are inimical to life. So you had a prebiotic Earth atmosphere in which life could not have possibly existed, but which was supposed to be the basis of providing the building blocks with which the molecules of life are going to be formed. Now, if that makes sense to you, you have a very flexible mind, in my opinion. About a decade ago, Orgel and Crick managed to provoke the public and their colleagues by speculating that the seeds of life were sent to the Earth as in a spaceship by intelligent beings living on another planet. Orgel says the proposal, which is known as directed panspermia, was sort of a joke. Well, it may have been sort of a joke, but it is still repeated sometimes in biology text, and in some cases at least, it's not presented there as a joke. The difficulty with it, as far as the origin of life explanation is concerned, it doesn't explain the origin of life, it just postpones it a step. It doesn't explain the origin of life on Earth, it simply transfers it back to wherever it was supposed to have come from. The same problems would exist there as do here. Miller, who after almost four decades is still in hard pursuit of life's biggest secret, agrees that the field needs a dramatic finding to constrain the rampant speculation. The reason for the rampant speculation being that there is nothing that has been come up with yet that makes good sense. So the speculation continues and will continue. Continuing the quote, does he ever entertain the possibility that Genesis was a miracle not reproducible by mere humans? Not at all, Miller replies. I think we just haven't learned the right tricks yet, he says, end quote. So he's been at this now for 40 years plus, and although there has been no credible evidence that even the proteins, the amino acids, can come into existence in a normal, in a natural environment, that is outside a laboratory, in the prebiotic condition. Never any evidence for that. He says that it's just because we don't have learned the right tricks yet. As we keep at it and keep working, we're going to figure out how to do that. Now, I've made the observation before that the fact that some of these kinds of things can be carried on in the laboratory is not evidence of the fact that they occurred on an Earth prior to the existence of life. It would rather seem to be an argument that it requires intelligence. Highly intelligent men have spent jillions of dollars and untold numbers of hours building laboratories and equipment and spending time in experimenting in order to accomplish this, which would seem to indicate rather plainly it's not going to happen by itself. It requires intelligence. But be all that as it may. Now, let's talk a little bit about this supposed prebiotic environment, because it is, I don't think it's possible for you to find a textbook presently that does not convey that idea as being the basis of life. There was an anonymous article which appeared in the New Scientist in 1980, July 10th of 1980. The article was entitled, Smaller Planets Began with Oxidized Atmosphere. Now, that title ought to suggest to you probably why it was anonymous. At that time in particular, the notion was that there had to be a reducing atmosphere, the methane, ammonia, hydrogen, carbon dioxide atmosphere. And so here was an article that was suggesting that that was really not the condition of that prebiotic atmosphere at all. It was really, really had oxygen. And there was a reason that it came about at that time. There have been discoveries since that time which seem to indicate the very same thing. But it is hung on to. There are some huge problems, in my opinion, impossible problems with deriving organic molecules out of those kinds of conditions, some of which we will talk about a little bit later. But that was the situation which existed at the time of this publication. Now, the quote. Although biologists concerned with the origin of life often quote an early atmosphere consisting of reduced gases, this stems as much from ignorance of the recent advances as from active opposition to them. This important conclusion is reached by Ann Henderson Sellers of Liverpool University and A. Ben Lowe and Jack Meadows of Leicester University. After a study of how the composition of the atmosphere of the Earth and other planets may have influenced surface temperatures since the planets formed, the more we have learned about Venus and Mars, the harder it is to explain how all three planets, two of them apparently lifeless, could have converted primeval, reducing atmospheres into oxidized atmospheres seen today. Now let me stop. Here you have that atmosphere that contained no free oxygen, which is presumably the basis of formation of the early molecules. And I'll comment about why that is, why the theorizing of a reducing atmosphere. There's a reason for that. But all of a sudden, that had to stop, and there had to be oxygen, huge amounts of oxygen coming from where, for pity's sake? But oxygen sufficient to supply what organisms today need. There's no organism today that can get along without oxygen. Even the so-called anaerobic bacteria require oxygen. The catch is they don't require atmospheric oxygen. They can get the oxygen out of the materials that they are feeding on or ingesting. But it's not that they don't require oxygen. Now, the final quote here in this final part of this quote, the time has come, it seems, to accept as the new orthodoxy the idea of early oxidized atmospheres on all three terrestrial planets. And the biological primers, which still tell of life on Earth starting out from a methane ammonia atmosphere energized by electrical storms and solar ultraviolet, need to be rewritten. So here is an article at that time arguing exactly the opposite of the view of the atmosphere that had no free oxygen in it. And it's just interesting to me, as I've observed before. When this happens, when you have knowledgeable people that are arguing both sides, it's very plain that no one knows the answer to the question.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.